Yes, it's Quadabost, a celebration of Reeves and Mortimer. Please welcome your hosts for this podcast, MJ Price and Paula Wiseman.
Hello and welcome to Quite a Boast, a podcast dedicated to the work and genius of Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer. My name is Matt Price, founder of the Reeves and Mortimer Depository of Curious Stuff Facebook group.
And I am Paula Wiseman, the creator and founder of the Divine Comedians podcast.
After first appearing on our screens presenting the weather forecasts on Breakfast TV, today's guest went on to become one of the most recognisable faces on British television, not least of all for captaining Team B through all 8 series of Shooting Stars, where she proved her comedy chops, whether modelling Geordie jeans, impersonating many celebs from Britney to Nigella, or downing a pint in record time. Please enter the Novelty Island paddock, Ulrika Johnson.
Hey!
Hi, Ulrika.
There she is.
Actually, the best introduction. Thank you.
Thank you kindly. So we can go back to where you were in your career at the time when Shooting Stars first appeared on the horizon. Was it just post-TV AM?
Gosh, so it was a really bizarre thing because I had left TV AM doing the weather and I jumped ship to take part in this random show called Gladiators, which nobody knew what was about. And it was a big gamble. Mm. Turned out to be a good one.
Did all right.
Well, it's back again as well, isn't it? So,
and I don't know if you know the backstory of how I was kind of, how I got my part in, I've got two dogs trying to break in, how I got my part in, what part, in Shooting Stars. So the boys obviously had an idea for a show. And Bob said to me that he saw me on a Noel Edmonds house party gotcha Oscar. So when they put teams against each other, they make you do random things and whatever. I obviously had no idea it was a setup and whatever else, and took it really seriously. And he said to me, like many years later, does like, oh, you just look like a bit of a laugh, which took it so seriously. So the first time they did like a pilot, I guess, for Shooting Stars, was they had Jonathan Ross, I think, as a team captain for the other side. But it was all based around the, was it 60s or 70s? That's how they based it. And I was on it, and I just had my first child. So 94, I had him, so it might be 95. And also, like, I wasn't in England at that time, so I didn't know any of the answers. And they kept making jokes about, like, oh, your baby's crying off the screen. How many babies have you got, or whatever else, yeah. That kind of malarkey. But, yeah, so that's kind of, and I thought, oh, this is dreadful. I just thought it was a dreadful idea. And then when they came back, obviously, it was a different format, a different idea, whatever else. But yeah, that was, but I had been a massive fan. Randomly, my first husband's parents were from the Northeast. And so, and I was just like massive Vic Reeves fan. So the whole idea of even working with him and then with Bob was just, it's really kind of hard to articulate, but yeah, a dream come true.
Because that point, as you say, that pilot episode and a few in the first series, there's a lot of references to old television, a lot of TV clips from, as you say, 60s and 70s. And they say if you didn't grow up with that, then it probably just means nothing. And as it went on, obviously, they put their own sketches in and it became more of a Vic and Bob show rather than a straight quiz.
Absolutely.
Quiz.
And I think that was actually, that's absolutely the point, is that they probably needed a vehicle to sell, to kind of sell the idea of it. But the show was all about them. The questions, as we know, are just random, bonkers, and irrelevant. They were all pegs onto which they could put their jokes and whatever. Mm. But yeah, I felt really lost in that.
Yeah.
I don't know why I've been asked on here, and I don't know what I'm supposed to contribute. And then it just became, when it was kind of fully commissioned, it just became a completely different thing.
Yeah, because I think you can see that first one. You seem to be enjoying it. Whereas like Wendy Richard is on there and she's taking it very, she's getting cross because it makes no sense.
Well, this is the thing, is that you can't, I understood how their humour worked. And one sort of, I guess, so my dad died many, many years ago, but I was, it was so lovely to bring him down to England. He came to a recording of Shooting Stars. So he's Swedish. So he's sitting in the audience and he's, what? So this is one of the early series and he's laughing away. Like, he has a very good sense of humour. And afterwards I said to him, oh my God, like, well, what did you find so funny? He said, I don't know. They just funny. Like, yeah. And that, I think that was the point, is that they sort of transcended, they or still do.
Yeah.
It's not something you can explain. Like, I don't think they would be able to explain how they come about. They are just like that. They fit really well. But like, if you were trying to translate or explain that sense of humour to anyone else, it would be really difficult.
Yeah, couldn't do it.
People who love it and get it really do love it and get it. But those who don't, it's just baffling.
Who are those people?
We want nothing to do with those people. So you were commissioned to be a series and you became team captain opposite Mark Lamar in the first three series. How was that relationship?
Yeah, what was that like?
There's many stories about Mark Lamar.
We really did have a love-hate. Well, I just think he hated me and he probably thought, oh, well, I don't know. He wasn't fussed about what anyone thought of him.
Mm.
But I think maybe as a woman, or maybe not just as a woman, but like, I don't know, I was quite young and whatever else. I just felt like he was really, yeah. And then I think it was quite, we were on tour and we had a conversation once in a bar and I was like, he's like, I don't hate you. And I was like, I don't hate you. And it was that moment where you're kind of, and we were never pitted against each other. It was just, he played a role and his role was to be a 50s stroke, but also to be very negative about anything that anyone said. And so I just felt that that was who he was. Whereas I felt that I came on Shooting Stars as myself, which was, you know, chatty and stupid and fooly, whatever. But yeah, it was never like antagonistic or anything like that, but it felt awkward at the beginning. Yeah.
It's good to see... It's... Going off on a tangent, I've listened today to Josh Widdicombe on Kathy Burke's podcast, and he's got a story about Mark Lamar on that, which is, I won't tell it now, but okay. it's worth listening to.
Okay. But equally, you know, when we were on, like I said, when we were on tour and it was somewhere sort of halfway, but he went, oh, I'll come pick you up, and it was like, oh, okay. So we went there together and it was like, okay, and then we'll just be nice to each other. But yeah, it's a strange, I think the thing to remember is that just because you work with people doesn't always mean that you're gonna like people. I know that that's very much sort of a picture that people paint with daytime TV and one thing and another.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that it's not really anybody that I've necessarily not got on with. So yeah, no, I really respect Mark. Was like, he's like so intelligent and just very straight. There was like no nonsense. There was no showbiz about him.
Yeah, for someone who wasn't in from the light entertainment world, he was a stand-up comic, but every show he seemed to be on, Big Breakfast, Shooting Stars, The Word, were all the most mainstream shows. Yeah. And of course, there was a very young Matt Lucas on those shows as well.
I know. And Matt just kind of blew me away because I hadn't ever encountered anyone. I mean, well, even with Jim and Bob, it was like that kind of thing where you just don't. That was an unusual humor. It was not. It's not your kind of regular, or it wasn't at that time. And then with Matt, he was just so left of field. He was so random, and the thing, but always really sweet, always very kind, very humble. Like, you know, when we would have conversations and about all sorts of things. And then he'd go on and sing a song about baked potatoes. Yeah. Or...
he was very young, though, as well, wasn't he, when he was...
I don't even know how old... Yeah, he must have been. I was quite young.
Well, I think when he did... he did Smell of Reason Mortimer just before Shooting Stars. I think he was about 18 then.
Yeah, late teens.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a huge part of the show, obviously. They knew what they were doing when they sort of picked him up. But you're right, like, that's quite a big thing to be doing at such a young age.
That's the thing. It never seems random, does it? Everything they do is, you might think it's random, but it's, you know, there's obviously a lot of planning. They've put these people in. They put these people in for a reason. Put people together for a reason.
That is actually all that needs to almost, we can end now. Thank you and goodbye. No, but it's true. No, but it's really true, because I would always think like things were like, just felt like things were sometimes a little bit, not airy-fairy, but like you just didn't know whatever else. No. There was always something behind it. Yeah. And it was always planned and anticipated. And even if... I think if they were smart enough to make a joke about someone else, they would always anticipate to come back and were always ready for it. So everything, and even with sketches, you know, I would come on set sometimes and I'd go, I have no script. And they went, well, you can just like make it up.
You don't need one.
I was like, okay. And so it almost became one of those things, but they knew what they were doing because, because they're magic. So I always wondered how they chose their guests.
Yeah.
So I was like, why have they got Diddy Hamilton? They had, we had everyone. I sat next to everyone you can imagine over the years. I mean, don't quote me on that, but like, yeah, it was a lot of people. And I was like, and Lisa Clark, our producer, and I would always say to her, why have they got... just leave it to them.
Just go with it.
They absolutely knew, obviously, what they were doing. And it was so smart, because there were people like, I thought, I can't think of anyone. But you know, when you think, that's an irritating person. Why have you got that person on? But they would find some way, they would like, either Vic would then rub his bloody legs. If it was a man, they'd catch people unawares. And I think that was the beauty of it. Oh, my gosh. Oh, we had, what's his name from Dallas?
Oh, Larry Hagman, yeah.
Fantastic. Oh,
so nobody was allowed to have, there was like strict rules. Nobody was allowed to smoke on set, as if that was ever going to happen anyway. I don't even know in those days if that was even allowed, but no alcohol allowed. I think because his wife had a liver, I don't know, it was some sort of, who, anyway, so everyone was like that, because it was like all these strict rules, but they still managed to sort of somehow penetrate that LA kind of Hollywood bullshit and just... Because he didn't have a clue.
Fantastic.
Oh, when man, that was the beauty of it, though, wasn't it? Oh, man, that was just the...
Absolutely. And I think that was the thing. That was the... That's their art, is to bring... I actually think they're not... they're not egotistical. I don't see them as like, because there are a lot of comedians out there who are like all out to like, it's all about me. Whereas for them, and when you see how they work together, you know, Bob is always like humble and does that kind of whatever, but still manages to like, he sometimes, I would never get a forewarning, but he was like, would you like, when you come on, like, would you mind if you like trip over a razor blade and like, you know, whatever, I know something, but like, I don't know, give me like a little pre-warning, but that wouldn't always happen. Yeah, there were,
I think with Bob, because some of the little regular little songs and rhymes that he used to sing to you, about whatever the latest tabloid story was, if anybody else on that set would have said it, you'd have gone, oh my God, that's a bit near the knuckle. When Bob came out with it, with that glint in his eye,
he got away with murder.
He get away with it.
You were talking about the footballer, right? There's not a footballer. But you see, that those things don't offend me at all, because number one, they're funny. And also, like, there's no like harm or malice involved in that. And I would never get a pre-warning about anything like that. And so that was the beauty of it. It was that, exactly, that I was there to be laughed at, but I laughed with them because they were so brilliant. So for me, it was a joy. I was basically getting paid to laugh every week. But
it's great. You can see like the early episodes, which you might not have got a grip on what the show was yet, and you're taking the quiz element really seriously, and you're getting upset if the buzzer doesn't work, or the points don't add up.
I was like, I know, and the funny thing is, I'm not a competitive. they deliberately, obviously, killed my buzzer, and then there would be that thing of like the end game, like if you won or lost, then you got to play. And at the beginning, I think I lost quite a lot. So whatever. So I got to wipe the fake snow off the windscreen of a car with my bum. I actually think, I'm wondering if that was the one that my dad attended. I can't remember, but what were you doing? It's like, in Sweden we don't do things like that.
How do you explain it? You know.
But yeah, just them inventing those end games was, I mean, I have to admit, I was at the point where I wanted to take part in them. I was really pissed off.
Yeah.
I knew someone else was going to.
Yeah. Because, I think it's they've admitted themselves, they knew beforehand who was going to do it out of the contestants. Yeah. They know who's going to win because who's going to end up doing the end game.
Yeah. No, there was a plan.
Yeah, of sorts, of course, obviously, Vic, Bob, Matt and Mark have come from comedy backgrounds and perform live. Yeah. And when it came to the sketches, I know you had acted in the past, but were you happy going into those?
Before I did anything, that was my ambition, was to be an actress. And then my mum said to me, oh, if you're going to be an actress, sorry, she has a Swedish accent too. she was like, you're going to be unemployed for 90
minutes. That's what you want to hear from your mum.
So I went to secretarial course, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so that I had a skill, which has proved very helpful. So I kind of had that and did lots of drama school auditions, whatever else. I think I slightly had that kind of knocked out of me, and then worked in TV behind the scenes, and then worked as a production assistant, runner, all that sort of stuff. So I kind of learned what it was all about. But acting, it's whatever you bring on the day. And I guess nowadays, anything goes. I mean, in those days, you really needed to, if you were proper acting, you needed to have a card and pay your dues and one thing and another. But doing the sketches, as I said, I would turn up on set sometimes and there'd be like a a day of filming or half a day of filming before we were recording the show in the evening, and it'd be like heart to heart.
Was Moida.
So it'd be like, it was Moida. You know, Jim would be doing it, like, or Vic would be doing it, like, it was Moida. But, and it'd be me in bed with Bob, and there was no script, and I'd be like, there's no script. And he'd be like, well, relate to whatever you want to say. And then Vic would walk in, like, literally on his knees, like, being, it was Moida, you know, doing his thing. And it was just all so random, but, so it felt like a privilege to be allowed to bring your own contribution to the thing. But also, I think the nice thing about it was that whatever you did was not wrong. No, they never said like, well, they never went like, that was shit. But or maybe they didn't like it. But they were like, whatever that take is, we want to capture that moment because that's comedy. That's what's going to make the whole journey or whatever else. But yeah, it was a, I just felt, it felt like a massive luxury to just be able to go in and be part of a scene and take part in something. And I mean, I've got pictures on my phone of like various wigs and stuff and set up. And well, that I think that was some of that was Geordie Jean's stuff, and then we did sort of Carry On stuff, and I just trusted them. And I think that's the thing, is if you trust the people that you're working with, it wasn't like, you know, we weren't doing Shakespeare. So I think their attention to detail was really very, very, it was very specific and quite intense. So they would be like, we don't mind about that bit, but this, that bit there, and that movement from this joke or that line or whatever has to be absolutely spot on. But then, you know, you do different takes, and they'd both be pissing themselves laughing. So don't think like they were standing there going, okay. They would, like, the number of times that Bob wet himself, like, like, you know, that would happen. And I think that's a really, without sounding too twatty and whatever wanky, but that's a really lovely, generous, artistic thing to give to people, to go, we're all part of this. They knew what they were going to try, but it was of the moment. You'd never be able to recreate those things again. You couldn't reread those scripts or whatever. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the key to them.
Yeah. But I mean, you saying you trusted them, but they obviously trusted you. Do you know what I mean? They chose you for a reason. Do you know what I mean? There was a mutual trust between them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I was just like completely thrown by the fact that I was even asked to do it, because it was so, even though, so my dad, he was very, very funny, very funny. I think, well, I'm not gonna say I'm funny, but I have a great, oh, I can't even say I've got a great sense of humour. I've got a wicked sense of humour.
Yeah.
I maybe have a nasty, bad, naughty sense of humour, whatever. Anyway, I often find humour in dark things and one thing and another. But at the time that they asked me to come and be part of Shooting Stars, I was clueless, like, in terms of knowing what they would want from me. I was humbled, you know. I was in the presence of Nick Reeves and Bob Mortimer, and you know, it's a bit like my mum going and seeing, you know, Neil Diamond or whatever else. It was just, you know, when you're just like, I don't know why I'm here. I'm just going to take part because I've been asked. And then we just fell into this rhythm, and I got there. Their humour is, for me, I was going to say it's the best, but it kind of is, because no one knows the key to it.
Yeah.
No, I remember seeing, I went to the Brighton, I think you were at the Brighton Centre.
Yes,
it was. Yeah, I was at that one. So I mean, how different? I mean, obviously you were used to performing, but how different was actually taking the show out in front of a live, I mean, obviously you're recording in front of live audiences and stuff, but how different was it, you know, taking it out on tour?
Well, it's a really good question, because I think in a way it was, I was gonna say, I preferred it. I mean, that's not... I preferred it in terms of the isolated performances, the travelling around was less fun. I was like the only woman on a bus of... touring bus of men. And, but, you know, and also, you know, Vic had just had a young child, I had a young child. So we were all like, all a little bit discombobulated and one thing and another. But back to the point of being on stage live, you cannot get away from a live audience. Like you can plan a performance, but your delivery will be dependent on how they respond, you know? Mm. And so, you know, you might go somewhere and it's a bit, I mean, it rarely was with Vic and Bob, but like it might be a bit less. And then other times, they're crap, especially up north, one thing along, they're becoming crazy. And then, that creates a whole different atmosphere, a whole different line of kind of jokes and whatever. So I loved it because it was random. And I was brought up on live TV. I mean, my first job on TV was doing the weather and it was live. So you didn't get a second take. So that was your chance. Like, this is your chance. You're going to do your dance. You're going to sing your song about hazelnuts or whatever they made you do. And you wouldn't always get it right or it would be wrong. And then, unfortunately, we were sponsored by a beer company. They were like, nobody was like that much under the influence. But, you know, there was that thing of like, well, you know, it was all around. I mean, I'm not a big beer drinker, but, you know, it was,
a bit of heckling. That's the trouble. That's the thing with live. You're going to do a live show like that. The audience want to get involved.
I wonder if nowadays people are a little bit more, well, hecklers are probably a lot braver and it's probably maybe even a bit nastier. I don't know how I felt quite, well, I'll say protected. I did, I guess. I didn't even really think about heckling. Like, if only I shouted anything, it would hopefully be something funny. I wouldn't even, because I had Vic and Bob there taking the piss out of me,
audience. That's the thing, everything's recorded, isn't it, these days? Even though you think it's not being recorded, there's always somebody with a smartphone that will catch you.
I know,
precise second in time.
That didn't happen.
No,
we didn't even have cameras. I don't know why I'm doing that. Like, you know, when I go like that when I speak on the phone, it doesn't look like that anymore.
We spoke to both Charlie Higson and Matt Lucas about the Shooting Stars Fast Show double bill shows at Hammersmith Apollo, and they both pretty much said that it was the first half, the Shooting Star half was anarchy, and then Vic and Bob would just go off and get pissed backstage. Well, Fast Show did their beautifully crafted sketches in the second half.
Written and choreographed.
This was so, like, as you say, it was so articulate and it was scene by scene by scene, whereas ours was a little bit like, we've got Aretha coming down from, we don't know if she's going to come down, we don't know what state she's going to come down in, and then she's going to dance with, you know, thingy, my god, I've got this name now, that was when we were doing Quest Face, what were we talking, 50s throwback,
Mark Lamar.
I was thinking Matt. I was going Matt, and of course, yeah. And so it was, because we would do our bit. Then I'd go and stand at the back of the seat, sort of, and watch the Fast Show, which was just so beautifully done. So, but it was great. It was lovely, and it was really nice to be, you know, around really talented people.
Yeah.
And the scale of it, even. Do you know what I mean? It's not a small room, is it, the Labatt, well, what it was at the time, the Labatt's Apollo?
What's it even called now?
I know. Every person I speak to, it's called
it changes, I guess. It's a fair old,
it's a big old cavern.
It is. But I don't think they ever cared, like Vic and Paul never ever cared about anything. For them, it was just like, I think Bob was probably, or is probably, like the more empathetic, more, you know, sensitive kind of, whereas Vic could just be like, okay,
whatever.
I don't, he genuinely would be like, but he kind of earned that because he's a brilliant person.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, I just remembered. Sorry. I've got some artwork by Vic that he sent me.
Oh, wow. That's a beautiful frame.
I know. Bubble too. So I think when my one of my children was born, I don't know.
That's your pension there.
I know, that's what I was thinking.
Crazy. That's incredible.
So let me just show you the picture and then I'll read you what it says.
Okay.
So that's the picture.
Wow.
Rudolf Nureyev imitating a smew as it passes over his house in the direction of the railway lines. I just literally, I had this in a tube for, I've got two or three, I've actually framed the original, the picture that he did for when my son was born. And I was like, I need to frame these or maybe sell them.
That's your pension. Yeah.
No, he is a genius.
Yeah, no. But he is an amazing. But I think that's the thing with them as well, is that they're two very different people, aren't they? And so they're just, but it works.
So when you had the first break from Shooting Stars, they gave you your own one-off special. It's Ulrika.
Oh, I know. So randomly, Bob tells me the story was they were at was it Switzerland, or there was some TV festival in whatever.
Oh, was that Montreal?
Montreal, Canada, maybe. Yeah.
No, or something. And they made an announcement. They're like, no, we've written a show for Ulrika. And Bob said, we hadn't written a show for you. We just said that to like get things going. Anyway, so they did that. Oh God, you really like that is random. I've always said that. I've buried that, but not in a bad way at all. It was hugely demanding, but like to have two people have like that faith and like, and that's when I met David Walliams for the first time.
That's one of his first TV appearances.
When I think I was being Anne thingy from
Anne Robinson.
That's it, the one. Yeah. And he was like, and he was a consumer who'd been done over, and he's like, well, have you ever been dead before? And all that stuff. I mean, we overran by so much because our lovely director just said, you need to stop laughing, or you can't, like, you seriously, this, it's in the whole crew, they have families to go home to. And it was really demanding. And they had visions, obviously, of me being Phil Collins.
Yes.
As you do.
And Cher, and with an RNLI tattoo on my arm.
And a Smurf.
Oh my gosh, it took me forever to get that blue paper.
Oh man, that Smurf thing was epic.
I mean, and just for me, it was lovely and it was amazing. I guess in many respects, the world wasn't ready for crazy, mad, bonkers. But also, I think it was put on August bank holiday. I don't know, I'm making excuses now, but basically, you know, it was a big jump, and this is 1998, I would guess.
Seven or eight, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, because I think which is quite a few years ago. And so women doing their own thing, and I probably wasn't known for doing acting or comedy or taking on roles or whatever else. So they took a punt on me and whatever, and I'm forever grateful for them giving me that opportunity. It was so intense. It was mad. But yeah, just having them behind you just gives you like, half the time I felt like I didn't know what I was doing because they were like, you're going to come on and you're going to be, and just do that and then do that. Oh, and you know, and just like, okay. I did feel, it's like, but it was good. It was really good for them.
It is worth a rewatch. I mean, at the time, yeah, the critics weren't kind to it at all, but I watched it. Watch it again on YouTube recently, and you're really good at it. You're really good at it.
There you go. You need to revisit.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I did. Poor people's eyes are bleeding.
When you went back to Shooting Stars, obviously now with Will Self and Johnny Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Am I right in saying with Johnny Vegas, if a show had previously taken an hour to record, it was like knocking on three. You had to edit it down to half an hour when Johnny got going.
It was. He was my co-team captain, I guess, or whatever. I loved him and whatever, but and there's no buts. I loved him and everything, but it was almost another show. And Will Self, I just found... Yeah, really hard work.
He was an unusual choice.
Yeah. And he was a brilliant choice in many respects because he's a wordsmith, obviously, and he's,
Still chalk and cheese, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, and it was just too... it was so intense where it almost becomes hard to build any kind of... If it's not a humorous relationship, is it a series, is it a... There was nothing, but maybe I don't know what kind of guidelines he was given off thing, but there was no like antagonism. I just found like it wasn't as fun as working with Mark or you know.
He probably was surprised as anyone to find himself being offered that role.
Yeah, and maybe he even hated it. Who knows?
Give me his due. He always threw himself into the sketches. I always loved him in the sketches.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's like he pretend. There was that thing. That's what slightly annoying me. It was like, do I have to be here? Having a hazelnut rammed up your asshole. I don't think he did have that.
That was in a cut scene.
That's another time.
It's on YouTube somewhere.
Oh God, everything.
But I think you do a lot more sketches again in those series. I mean, you're as I said at the beginning, your Nigella, I think, is probably a standout. A lot of people reference that.
Oh well, so hilariously, that was a classic one where I turned up and there was no script, and I said to Bob, and I think I had this really wee bit sort of not entirely aware of Nigella, so like, I mean, which sounds daft because I spend my time cooking and one thing another, but I wasn't quite I had no idea what, and he was like, well, just do a bit of this, do a bit of that, like a bit of touching your boobaroobas and put your bra in, whatever. So it was completely unscripted, and then it was literally like, and I was like, and they all thought that was great, and I was like, okay, job done, okay, fine. And then I look back at it now and I think, oh, I see. I know. When she puts things in the microwave and touches her nipple. No, she doesn't. What job do you get where you get asked to come in and just like do random stuff
about.
But with a very strict backbone of people who know what they're doing. It's not like I'm sure you're aware of, like, can't name it now, but like there is comedy that you see or sketches where you feel like it's just a bit too loose, there isn't much guidance or strictness or whatever else, whereas I think the way that they did things was, it was very, they knew where they started and where they needed to go to. We didn't know what was going to happen in the middle.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
and I think that that's their craft.
Yeah, so there's another break for a few years. Then you came back again with Jack in the team.
Oh, yes! Love
it was
Jack.
Great.
Oh,
he was great
he's amazing.
I love Jack because, again, I didn't build like any strong friendship relation or anything like that. I think I was probably feared him based on his character.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. His face, like he was the only person at that time, from what I remember, who was doing that kind of deadpan misery kind of look. And so I would just piss myself looking at him. not literally, but like I would just laugh so much. I loved.
I said Jim and Bob obviously really revel in trying to make him break that and burst into laughter, which is always the highlight of those shows.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Like, clearly there was some sort of either, you know, it would be set up, but like he was unbreakable. And Bob is like a giggly 7-year-old. He's not laughing. Like, I don't understand how you cannot laugh.
Yeah.
But Jack managed to be miserable. It's just like, I can see his face now. Yeah, it's very, 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 very funny. Yeah.
And you were joined again by another new member who was a burger van owner by the name of Angelos Epithemou, the great Dan Skinner. But as he said to Dan, that was a hell of a risk because nobody knew who this person was. Whether you knew who he was in advance.
No, absolutely not. I just knew that, you know, Matt was going on to different things, but they were like big boots to fill kind of thing. Mm. And then Dan just was a miracle. Like, I just feel like his humour, I mean, obviously people need to know that he is absolutely who he is on screen.
Yeah.
Off screen, he's just like the nicest person.
Yeah, yeah.
The nicest person. But his humour is right up my alley, as the actress said to Bishop. I mean, it's like, he is, I just couldn't, you know, just the glasses and the look.
And the tie.
The whole, yeah. And the little bat and the bag. To me, I didn't even know. I literally walked on set one day and here we go. And Angelos says, what are the, you know, whatever.
This guy.
I'd be like that. Oh my God. And he was just, he's a character. I mean, he's a great actor. I mean, a performer too, but obviously he does acting stuff and one thing and another. He's amazing.
Well, we spoke to Dan and he said, yeah, obviously when you're a character comedian, you've got to commit 100% to that character. And he doesn't break that at all.
He's fully immersed, isn't he? Once he's in, he's in.
Yeah. He was very, and I think we had a couple of conversations. Oh no, that one, we weren't even doing Shooting Stars. That's right. I put it forward. We did a sort of like a Strictly dance for comic relief or something
that. Oh, yeah.
So we were, that's right. We were in dressing rooms and he was like, yeah, you know, I do my yoga. And I'm like, you do yoga? He's like the last person you'd expect. But sorry, I shouldn't give that away. Maybe him as a person is what I'm saying, away from his character. But he's just, he is, maybe that's why I never got to sort of properly know him. I mean, he was very much like, if he came in the makeup room, he was Angelos. You could not have like, hey, how's it going? He'd be like,
And so, he's so softly spoken, isn't he, though, when he's when he's not Angelos.
Well, and I mean, he's just nice. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke.
Such a well thought out character.
Mm.
Down to the tiniest detail, Like, and that's what I think that's what the boys really like, is that they like attention to detail, because that's how they are about any story. I always remember Charlie Higson saying about Bob, saying something like, oh, he squirted tart lemon in his eye. And it was just the use of the word tart in that sentence. And obviously the way that Bob would say that, but tart lemon, like you'd go, I squirted lemon in my eye.
Yeah.
And you think it's not funny, but I squirted tart lemon in my eye. And I just remember that. And it was just the way that they will use words and the way that they use words that really paints the picture.
Again, it sounds like Bob's eye. Do you know what I mean? He spots these people. You know, we're hearing different stories from different people, how they got involved with Jim and Bob initially. And a lot of these stories involve, you know, Bob seeing them and seeing something.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's well, I think the bottom line, the only line response to that is the fact that we just don't know how their minds work. No, but genuinely, like, I would never know, like, even their choice of guests, all that sort of stuff. They know. You think, I'd always think, oh, they should have like the most famous person, or they have the greatest choice of this, that, and the other. No, they would choose somebody who was like random from either part or something that they could create something out of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see it on when they appear on these panel shows. The other comedians who against each other are always competitive, one-upmanship at the best line. When Jim or Bob start, they just sit back and let them go. And you can see the other comics are just enjoying it because they know they can't compete.
Yeah.
Because they can't think on that level.
It's really funny that you should say that, because when I would have guests on either side, celebrity guests or whatever else, I would often say, don't fight it.
Yeah.
Like, don't fight it. Don't go, because number one, this was Vic and Bob's show. Having said that, if someone was funnier than them, they would absolutely applaud that and be very gracious. But when the worst guests were people who were trying to counter them all the time, answer them and reply and be funnier, it's like, no, mate, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Sit back, let them reduce you. And no, but it's really true. And I think it's so evident, like you say, when you watch other shows and you see comedians like them, yeah, yeah, and they're going at each other. Whereas I just think, like, they're just humble enough to know that, you know, I just say a little line or whatever.
Yeah. So who was your favourite guest of all time on Shooting Stars, Norica?
Oh, God, you're talking like a hunt. I honestly...
Who stands out?
Oh my gosh, you should have asked me beforehand. I honestly need like a long list and then have to. I think sometimes, like, when you hear that someone's going to be on and you look forward to it, and then sometimes they're not.
Yeah. Doesn't meet your expectations.
And I'm struggling now to sort of name and shame, but like, even, you know, Larry Hagman, like him coming on was like, we were like, oh God, this is going to be great. And it was just fucking awful. It was just a horrible atmosphere on the floor for the whole recording. But yeah, so, oh gosh, I don't know. Just,
I won't demand
it. No, I was going to say.
You're going to say the worst.
No. I'm trying to think of, oh, I could probably like,
oh,
I can no. I genuinely can't think of anyone, because of genuinely it's been 1,000 years. But if you had a list, and probably as I walk away from this, I will remember. But I think people who, as I said before, who come on the show and think that they can make a stamp and make a name for themselves on the show is always a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
I always think that you know, I was trying to pre-warn people, like, this is, you know, just go with the flow. Like, if they're going to, I mean, we had Paul Daniels and Debbie on, and they were such good sports. Like, I was like, we were laughing, ha, 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 here they're coming on. But they were like, took it on the chin. It was like, yeah, I mean, all sorts of different people we've had on, comedians, actors, actresses, you know, people that I've made friends with subsequent. It's just, yeah, it's just a random mix.
I suppose nowadays, the reality stars, which I think a few seem to creep in towards the end of shooting stars, but they go on these shows to plug whatever they got to plug, whereas shooting stars not about that.
No, and actually you're really right, because obviously now we have all sorts of, well, she says, but obviously every reality shows weren't really happening at that time, and people who were on were either new stars who'd sort of were just carving out a career, but like a career, or they were people who had carved out a proper career for a long time. And I despair. Well, half the people I don't know, and they've been famous for 2 seconds, and I know that sounds like really disparaging, but I come from a tradition of where you're trained and you have to earn your place, and nowadays you basically just have to appear on something. And that's the thing, I think, that if shooting stars ever came back, which I don't suppose it will, but I'm just saying, like, they wouldn't have those people. Well,
they wouldn't be YouTubers.
Well, can you imagine what would Bob make, and I mean, they would tear them apart. That's the problem.
Oh yeah.
And they'd probably be sued for, like,
yeah.
You know, it'd be that kind of scenario. But yeah, it's they you're absolutely right. It's a different world now, and maybe I do think their humour, though, because when we came back that sort of second or whatever third time it was, you know, the people who had originally been like university students who enjoyed it were then older, and then there was like a new cohort of kind of uni students as well as their parents coming to watch the show. So the humor is or the comedy, whatever you want to call it, is timeless. It's timeless, and it's, according to my dad, apparently, my late father, it's crosses all countries and languages, because he had no idea what he was laughing at, but it was very funny.
That's great. And just briefly, the last time I think we saw you on TV with Bob was on Gone Fishing Christmas a couple of years back with Bob and Paul, which was a joy, in Norway.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was, I mean, who would have known that a show with two old fellas going fishing was such a huge success? But crazy. Not only, like, I know, but it's like beautifully shot. I mean, it's so beautiful. And then what I love, I know Paul a bit, and obviously know Bob a bit, and just having them having those interactions and chats is such an unusual and a new, and it's a really lovely thing. Because Bob brings out, he's so naughty and so cheeky. And Paul can be quite serious, but equally, he's freaking hilarious and brilliant. But just having that kind of intimate, what a brilliant idea. And who would have thought?
They did, but I mean, Bob's achieved like national treasure status now, hasn't he?
Well, absolutely. I mean, just... I can't look at his face without laughing. in a most complimentary, you know, way, with his little hat on, saying something like, you know, and it's just like, and then Paul just standing there going, what?
Yeah. What? Oh, man, they're falling over, though.
Oh, my God.
The falling over are incredible. It's never intentional.
But that's what I mean. But that is... But that's also a bit of sort of Vic and Bob, isn't it? That slapstick kind of thing where things just, I love that. Falling on banana skin or doing some, that silliness and that level. Well, obviously, as you say, like Gone Fishing is not deliberate. But like, only.
Don't whine, Bob.
Don't whine. Yeah. I thought though, four series so far. You know, it's
mad.
It's crazy, and I think
well, not mad. I mean, it's just remarkable.
No, but it's,
yeah.
It got people through lockdown as well, didn't it? You know, it was.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't really feel ashamed of it, but I just didn't even know about it. I really don't think watching that much TV. I was trying to not kill my children because they'd all come home.
Yeah.
Three of them were home. And the weather was good, so we were mostly outside, I think, originally. But yes, you're right. It's weird, isn't it, how certain things go. I came to the gone fishing thing much later.
Mm.
But because why would I watch a fish?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So were you homeschool? Were you homeschooling your kids during lockdown?
Oh God, no. Oh God, no. But also I think what the youngest was 13, 14, mm. I was like, oh, I trust you. Yeah. And then the one after that was the first cohort to not sit GCSEs.
Oh, right.
So, but yeah, it was just a weird time, wasn't it? Gosh, mm. You can't even think back to
it
that
It is bizarre,
time,
but... yeah.
Yeah. So we're saying that time is, the way we view time has changed, you know, because there was the weird blip. Of lockdown.
Well, I was going to say that because I feel like I've kind of lost 3 years.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Where I just go, I don't know if that was 20.
Yeah, was it before? During?
Yeah. Was it before the plague or, you know, what? And I think actually, I was so looking forward to us coming out of lockdowns or whatever else, and now we're just living this horrible.
Oh, God.
And cost of living and no work and no, you know, for it's too, and I'm like, can we maybe go back
to good old days?
Just press the reset button.
It's awful, but no, I mean, I don't mean to make light of it, but I was expecting to feel much lighter about coming out.
Jim and Bob give you a call tomorrow and say new series of Shooting Stars, are you in?
Oh, definitely. I'd turn them down, obviously. No. I mean, I think that I'm guessing it wouldn't happen in terms of they are doing their own things and their own lives, and so for them, I don't know. Maybe if someone offered them billions after, I don't know, but I don't think they're even motivated by that. I think they're just motivated by what they want to do.
Yeah.
Creatively, genuinely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Jim's an amazing artist. Bob falls over really well. I mean, what could you want? But it would be, I tell you what, it would be amazing if we could do, like, let's go on tour. Let's do, like,
that'd be amazing.
But can you imagine they'd make a...
Well, the Fire Show are doing it. They're doing a reunion. Why not? They're doing a few live dates.
Are they?
Well, no, but the tour, I think the tour sold out in a day. The whole tour just sold... The whole tour sold out, and they're talking about making some more dates. And they basically said they wanted to do it before they all died.
Well, no, but I also think that slightly goes back to what we were just talking about in terms of being in lockdown and whatever else, like finally being able to go out and do, like, be part of that sort of scenario. Absolutely. Well, put it to them.
Yeah.
But it shows that the love's still there. Do you know what I mean? This, like, 25 whatever years later.
That kind of comedy, and I'm talking about the Fast Shows, you know, it just doesn't. It's just brilliant. It's just brilliant, and there are some amazing comedians out there and writers out there right now. I mean, I bloody love it, and I love watching some people. And so it's not like it's a dying art or anything like that. But when you get that thing, where you know, just never, it's timeless.
Yeah. Well, as we come to a conclusion, Orica, you might notice at the beginning of the interview, when I introduced you, I resisted pronouncing your name in a certain way that Bob may have done on Shooting Stars. I didn't think I'd earned the right, to say it. I'm sure you got sick of people shouting it in the street.
Now you know each other so well.
But at the end, I just needed your permission, really, before I could say it.
You don't need my permission.
You don't usually ask for permission.
I don't know what to say to that. You going to go with me on this, Paul, or am I on my own?
Do what you've got to do. So,
thank you for joining us. That really was quite a boast. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Ulrika. I couldn't get it more wump, I think.
That was good. That was a good effort.
I know, it's so funny. Well, it doesn't happen that often, but it is always a lovely thing.
I mean, do you get it in the street or anything? You wonder whether...
Do I get it in the street?
Do you get it in the street?
I mean, where I live quite sort of semi-rurally. Everyone knows who I am, so nobody's bothered. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, in the old, I'd either get one or two things. It would be Ulrika, ka, 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 or what's the weather like? Yeah. Look out our window, look out, you know, little. Very frustrated, but yeah, no, so that would be one of it. But yeah, no, I haven't heard that, so that's nice.
Oh, I'm glad I reminded you of it.
You've done a good job.
Time.
Thanks. Feel very
Thanks
proud.
So much for that, Ulrika.
Thanks, Ulrika.
Oh, it was lovely. It was really lovely to reminisce. I've got pain in my jaw now from laughing.
Thank you all for listening to this edition of Quite a Boast. Special thanks to Matt Lucas for permission to use the Peanuts music as our theme tune, and thanks to Ed Lewis for this edit. Thank you to Jake Chesham for permission to use the photo from his 1995 shoot of Jim and Bob in our various online locations for the podcast. And of course, thank you very much to Jim Moyer and Bob Mortimer, without whom this podcast, well, it just wouldn't exist, would it? Remember to check out Paula's Divine Comedians podcast as well, and to join the Reeves and Mortimer Depository of Curious Stuff Facebook group. And I think you'll agree, that really was a lot of fun. Goodbye.